So next on the RT Rugby Podcast, I'm delighted to be speaking to Ian Payton, rugby reporter for the Sydney Morning Herald. Ian, thanks a million for joining us on the podcast. We're looking to get, I suppose, the Australian perspective. People might see the stadium behind you. We are here. Yeah. This is the night of the First Nations and Pacifica game on Tuesday night. We're not really going to be talking about that. It's more looking back on the first test and looking ahead at the second test.
Sure.
What has the general reaction been in Australia to the first test? Because we've seen it in Ireland, back home in Ireland, and in Britain as well. It's kind of been a case of the Lions absolutely dominating Australia for those first 40 minutes. But the reaction, I suppose, from a Lions point of view to the second half has been quite poor. Yeah. Joe Schmidt was took a lot out of those last 20 minutes. Yeah. What has the reaction been among the Australian public, the Australian press?
Do you know what? It's probably your reaction been in reverse. You know, like, obviously really disappointed with that first hour, essentially. Lions, as you know, it's been raked over ad nauseum at this point, but Lions were utterly dominant in that period. The game felt like it was over as a contest. But Australia, you know, they had good impact from the bench, which was uncommon on this tour. We've seen the Lions bench really be decisive in most of the games so far, but the Wallabies bench had the better of it. And they just kept going. They started to get a little bit more dominance in the contact and roll forward, which they hadn't had for an hour, and scored a couple of tries late. The result was never in doubt, but to answer your question, I think you've given people a little bit of, you know, hope. I wouldn't say confidence, but hope that they aren't as far off as the Wallabies aren't as far off as what that first hour had indicated. You know, that's all tied up with, you know, the hope that there'll be some guys coming back into the team, which I'm sure we'll discuss later, that can make this contest a bit better. Probably layered underneath all of that is the fact that Australia has won the second test in the last two tours right here in Melbourne. So a little bit probably in reverse to what you guys are going through. You know, you'd be content with the first hour. Unhappy with the last 20 minutes. Where is it? Where in the reverse, I'd say.
You mentioned the guys potentially coming back in. Rob Valentini, Will Skelton. Now, Joe Schmidt was fairly confident they were going to be fit last week. They weren't there. It seems almost certain they are going to be in the side this week.
Yeah.
That's instant impact in the forwards and probably a little bit more parity compared to what we saw a Lions team bully Australia up front in the first half as well. But outside of that, are you expecting to see many other changes?
No, I don't think so. I think you could make a case to make a couple of changes. You could make a case to see Tate McDermott start with Tom Liner, but he really likes Tate McDermott coming off the bench. Skelton will be fit. I think Langy Gleeson is fit. Valentini, they tell us, is fit. And he was put up for media duties yesterday. Now, that actually doesn't usually signal anything under Joe Schmidt. You'd remember well, he's got a habit.
Will Skelton did media last week.
Exactly, and I've seen it a couple of other times. So that makes me a little bit wary. And we went and spoke with Alan Alalatoa today, who threw in a kind of fingers crossed he'll be right type answer. So it's, you know, it's a little bit clouded. He'd be a massive in. He's the best player in Australia. You know, let's just put it out there. He's the best player in Australia. He's won the Players Player Medal for the last two seasons of the Wallabies, the John Eales Medal. He's the guy who takes tough carries. He takes one in every three or four carries and actually gets across the game line, which every single problem that the Wallabies experienced at the weekend was the fact that they couldn't win the collision, and it all went downhill from there. So, yeah, big in if he's fit, Rob Valentini. Will Skelton, I don't think, would start. He'd come off the bench, so he'd give late game impact. You guys know Joe very well. He's the type that will pick and stick. He won't throw the baby out with the bathwater after one defeat. So I think we'll see a pretty similar team other than those injured guys coming in.
On Valentini, you mentioned what he offers, like the big, big ball carrier. And we saw it for Australia against Ireland last November as well, when Joe Schmidt's side nearly pulled off a big win there. Who tried to take on that responsibility on Saturday, and what was the outcome?
Yeah, look, a bunch of them did. I think Harry Wilson
tried to share the load around a little bit more, was it?
You know what? He's not physically, he's not all that much bigger than a Harry Wilson or a, you know, a Nick Champion de Crepney. But we've got a saying, I don't know if you guys have it, he's a member of the Concrete 15, you know, like he's just built, you hit it, he's like Marika Korobiti, you know, like there's guys that are just, and they talk about, you know, when you hit them, it feels like you're tackling concrete, and he's one of them, you know, like he's got an uncanny ability to have power in contact. Yeah, they didn't get enough of it, and they went to the wrong places. Once you're trying to run into the teeth of that defence with, you know, Ty Byrne and Mauro Itoje and you name it, they were just getting munched up. They started to have a bit more success when they moved the point of attack a little bit wider and were looking for Finn Russell. And I think they'll take all the lessons out of that, but both teams will study up on what worked and what didn't and change accordingly. But look, if he's not there, Langy Gleeson, I think, will come back in. He's also a pretty powerful ball runner, another Fijian kind of heritage there. He's a big, strong boy, did really well for the Waratahs this year. So I'd imagine that if Valentini doesn't play, you know, like that Langy Gleeson would probably come into that role.
And then I suppose the next challenge is getting Joseph Akusasu-Ali'i into the game more, getting him onto the ball in space and not having him kind of having to just simply get over the gain line, but getting someone to get over the gain line for him so that he can get the space. 100%. How do they go about doing
that? Well, they decided to play him in the centres, which we saw do really well on the spring tour, particularly in that England game. They need to build shapes around that get him more time on the ball away from the rush defence. Like at the moment, on the weekend he was just running into traffic all night. It's interesting. There's a big debate in Australia about where he should be playing. You know, he played fullback for the Waratahs and did really well. You know, like, you know, there's some stats floating around that's going to show he's almost doubly effective as far as that running threat when he plays fullback as opposed to centre.
And people have compared him to, it's like style-wise, to Izzy Folau.
Yeah, look,
tormented the Lions back here 12 years ago.
100%. And he has that capacity. He has the capacity in the air as well. He's just as good as Izzy Folau was on the air. So, you know, there's actually an argument he should be playing wing, really. I think there's the poor old wingers still cop a bad rap in the modern world. It's kind of like, you know, no superstar plays wing. But actually, when you look at it, some of the great superstars of the game play wing. And they've got him at 13, so they're going to have to work hard to, you know, create space for him to, you know, some second wave play and that sort of thing. But the Lions' rush defence was excellent at the weekend and shut him down. So you're right. If he's not, you know, in a dominant mood, if he's not putting in a dominant performance, then, you know, it makes it all that much harder for the Wallabies to win.
Speaking of the Lions' rush defence, and someone who had to deal with that a lot was young Tom Lyon on his first Wallaby start, just his fourth cap last weekend.
Yep.
He's someone we wouldn't know a huge amount up in our part of the world, seeing bits of him in Super Rugby. I suppose a really, really tough first start to assess him on, given he was playing behind a pack that was constantly going backwards. What can you tell us about him? Obviously, we know his name. We know his the famous lineage. He comes from good rugby stock.
But he does.
What sort of a player is he if he can be able to play behind a pack that's moving forward?
He's deceptively athletic. He's a little bit like his old man. Like he never seemed like a purebred athlete. Look, it's funny. We didn't know much about Tom as a youngster at all. He grew up in London. He was born in Italy and grew up in London. Michael's been working in London effectively since he retired. So he was a talented schoolboy there. I think he was in the Harlequins junior system there. But, you know, a combination of factors, he always felt like he had a connection to Australia and Marcus Smith was in his way at the Queens. So he's told the tale a fair bit that, oh, I always felt Australian, but the other night, we priced it out of him that, you know, well, you know, I wasn't going to go anywhere with Marcus Smith. I'm a 10, you know, I wanted to play first team. So he came out here and, yeah, as you mentioned, one of his big assets is his tough as teeth. You know, he got bashed up the other night, and that's not the first time. Like, he weighs 81 kilograms, which is, there's only one player lighter than him in the Wallaby squad, and that's Nick White, you know, the pint-sized Nick White. So the funny part about him is he looks like a guy on the street. You know, he doesn't look like a professional athlete, but he's got fantastic skills, a great kicking game, so that's a big part of what they like about him. He's just got a natural kicking game, good off the tee, good in open play. And, you know, it's kind of, he's one of those athletes that, maybe gets underestimated, consistently underestimated, and then sometimes those people can kind of slide through gaps that they shouldn't be able, no one thinks that they should be allowed to, you know.
You mentioned, kind of ironic, you mentioned Tom Lynagh getting in with the Wallabies kind of because he fell through the cracks in England.
Yeah.
Obviously, we have players in this Lions squad, Mac Hansen, yeah. Finlay Beelam yeah. from Ireland, Sione Tuipulotu, guys who fell through the cracks of the system yeah. in Australia and are now at the highest level of rugby. How much introspection has been done over here as to how like some of these guys have fallen through the cracks?
You know, it's always hugely embarrassing for the National Union when someone... I mean, it's not uncommon that people who can't get a gig do go and, you know, take advantage of overseas offers. What's less common is that they kill it, you know. And that's when that's the sting in the tail, particularly for Mac. Finlay Beelam went straight over after
It's probably school, yeah, it's probably a different example. He went
Mac
over the age of 18.
And Sione Tuipulotu was a very, very talented junior. It's hard to know because at the time they're kind of... they're being assessed by a state coach, you know, a Super Rugby coach, about a future contract or whatever. And they make calls on, you know, and sometimes you look at, like, Mac Hansen was behind, you know, a handful of pretty good wingers. Mm. And at the time, you can understand maybe the call that they, well, we don't have space for you. Or they did actually make him an offer, I think. But, and Sione, he and the coach at the time of the Rebels, Dave Vessels, just, you know, they were oil and water, I think, probably, and he didn't seem to value what he had. And it's interesting listening to Sione talk now. He was saying, oh, I wasn't the player I am now when I was in Melbourne. So I think, you know, there's credit to be given to, in those two examples, Hansen and Tuipulotu.
People changing along the way and maturing.
They change.
New environments.
Grow up a little bit, go overseas, get out of the bubble that they've always been in. And they go to good systems. You know, they went to Glasgow and Connacht, which, you know, poor old Connacht, you know, they're obviously not the Leinster of the world, but, yeah, it's a perfect place for Mac Hansen, you know, like a bit of a free spirit and a guy who's going to prove people wrong, and he's done exactly that. And it's funny, actually, I think a lot of people, like, these are guys who have come back to play against Australia, but you would have seen it, the reception for them is genuinely warm, like they're happy, people are happy, certainly their teammates and things are happy to see them have succeeded, because they're just good fellas.
Just a couple more questions before I leave you go. The first is on where rugby union is in the Australian sporting landscape at the moment. We were up in Brisbane last week, Thursday evening, huge game in the NRL at Suncorp.
Yeah.
Then on Friday as well, the Brisbane Lions, second in the ladder in the AFL, were playing to a sold-out GABA, and then we had Suncorp for the Lions on Saturday. Down here in Melbourne, the AFL is dominating. There's AFL games in stadiums in Melbourne Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. There's one on at the same time as the Lions are playing at the MCG this weekend. Rugby union, we've kind of heard a lot, is in a real battle for hearts and minds in Australia. How is this tour being seen? How is it being received?
It's been received well. I think everyone understands the significance and the rarity of it. But you talk about the battle. I mean, it's been ever thus. You know, those two codes have been professional. AFL and rugby league have been professional for 120 years. Rugby's professional. What are we up to?
30 this year.
Australian rugby went through a period of success, so it's benchmarked, you know, in that late 90s, early noughties. So people kind of got used to that, and it's consistently benchmarked against that now in Australia. Particularly the Wallabies, that, you know, they're kind of now, they're not a top five team anymore. They're a second five, you know, the second five kind of bracket now. I think that's a reflection of the world game has grown as well, mightily, you know. It's fair to say that rugby is, you know, it's AFL and NRL are dominant codes in this country, and depending where you are, as you just explained, like, we're in Melbourne, you could ask half the people on the street, you know, to name a wallaby, they wouldn't be able to do it, right? So that's just it. AFL is like India in cricket, they're obsessed by it. NRL is very popular in up the eastern seaboard of Australia. There's probably, you know, it's an unfortunate situation, but there are code wars as well, you know, like this kind of like people don't necessarily embrace both. So rugby's kind of in that next tier below, so with football, some of the other sports, cricket's obviously a huge sport as well, but tools like this are really important for rugby to put on.
And financially, this is...
Financially huge. So in terms of public visibility, great, huge. All these tests will be watched by lots of people. Financially, massive. You know, the post-COVID, every union in the world was in trouble. Rugby Australia, you know, in as much trouble as any. This is certainly a huge saving grace to them. They're going to make something in the order of $100 million Australian dollars, pay down the debt that they've got, that they took to. They didn't go down that private equity route. They took on debt. They'll be able to pay that down, and then we've got the second fortunate occurrence, which is the Rugby World Cup's coming in 2027. So that's going to bank another $100 million, and you know the hope is that. What the suits tell us is that that's going to set the game up financially for, you know, they're going to invest that into ensure that the game is strong for years to come.
Watch this space. Finally then, I'm not going to talk about what a Wallabies win in the entire series would do. We're a long way from that, but what would a win this weekend do? To send everyone down to Sydney next week for a test decider, what would that do for the short term of Australian rugby, and even just for the media attention, the eyeballs that are going to be on the events next week? Are the Australian public the kind of people, I think maybe a little bit like the Irish, if the event is big enough, they're going to get into it.
Of course, love a winner. You know, like this one thing Australia does is get behind its national teams. So that, you know, it would be a huge achievement. I think what gets lost in the modern day is that the Lions are an incredibly powerful team, best of four entire Test Nations, the majority of which are in the top 10. And Australia, as you've just mentioned, is a nation that is not drawing from 100% of its best football athletes. So the Wallabies to beat the British Lions would be a great result. I think we've seen enough to indicate that they could get it done on a good day, it would certainly send, you know, a decider in Sydney would be a massive event.
Right, Ian, it's been a pleasure having you on the podcast. We're going to enjoy this game tonight.
We are.
We'll see you at the MCG on Saturday, and then on to Sydney next week.
Good man.